So I'm super curious why Ernest Shackleton was so important that you decided to dedicate an entire chapter out of all the different things you can talk about in your life and your business to this guy. So maybe break it down.
Sir Ernest was an Arctic explorer. Just prior to World War I, he decided to make an expedition to go to the South Pole. What he did as a leader to hold the team together, to tell them, we're never going to quit. We're never giving up. I'm going to get you home.
What does passion mean for an entrepreneur? How did you find passion? How did you architect passion? Maybe it's not finding it. Maybe it's building it.
The internet has changed everything. It's the equalizer. It's bringing education to billions of people that never had that opportunity. United States of America is the greatest hotbed of entrepreneurial spirit in the world.
You know, if you were going to build something, how do you manage all these different people? What's the strategy so that you get it right?
If you look at today's Generation Z, the concept of prejudice is so far removed than any previous generation. Well, this is very strange, maybe taboo.
Welcome to Success Story. I'm your host, Scott Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. HubSpot is a huge supporter of the show. I'm a huge fan of HubSpot, not just because they support the show, because they support entrepreneurs. And if you are an entrepreneur, you have some problems that a lot of entrepreneurs have. Productivity, and it's not a secret. It's nothing to be ashamed of. You're not the only one that has this problem. And why do we have this problem? Well, all the tools and the tech that we're using, they're massively overcomplicated. We have tons of time-consuming tasks. Our teams are not getting the information they need to close the deals, connect with customers, whatever it is. As entrepreneurs and our teams, we all have productivity problems, but HubSpot's customer platform truly helps. It was built to save time and make your job easier so you can get back to building your business. No more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. No more chasing down prospect info if you're trying to close someone. No more one system for this, another system for that. HubSpot can help you find leads, reach prospects, deliver the insights you need to convert them to customers all in one place. Plus, HubSpot AI can literally do more work for you so you can focus more on scaling your business because HubSpot knows you have massive growth goals and they're here to make your productivity problem go away. Visit HubSpot.com to learn how they can help you grow better. All right, Dave, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you a lot. It's going to be a lot of fun. I want to kick this off with one of the chapters in your book, which I don't always jump right into the book, but I thought this was an interesting chapter. So you wrote an entire chapter on Ernest Shackleton. So I'm super curious why Ernest Shackleton was so important that you decided to dedicate an entire chapter out of all the different things you can talk about in your life and your business to this guy. So maybe break it down.
So Sir Ernest Shackleton was a rather amazing individual. As many heroes, he had clay feet. He was a womanizing drunk, hellraiser. But when you start talking about leadership and management, he was superb. I discovered him through studying things, and there was a management leadership development company that had made an 8-hour program on his leadership lessons. I looked at it, I fell in love with it, and I said, I'd like to buy the program from you and customize it for RE/MAX audiences. The people were awesome. They were very kind to me. We put a program together. Of course, RE/MAX has its own TV studios, its own communication department. And we put this amazing story about this individual. Sir Ernest was an Arctic explorer. And just prior to World War I starting, he decided to make an expedition to go to the South Pole. And so he got funding and grants from the British government. They had a boat called the Endurance. He ran an advertisement. 5,000 people responded to they wanted to go on the adventure. And I think he picked 27 individuals. So they're casting off, and World War I starts that moment. And everybody stops, and they said, put us in the war. We'll do this after the war. And the king said, no, this is an important effort. We've got millions of men that we can put into the war. Continue. So they continued. They refurbished themselves, got extra food and stuff, and they went into the ocean near the South Pole, and they hit it wrong. They got frozen in. And as the ice floe froze in on them, they said, well, at least, you know, we got all the food, everything we need. We just stay in the boat. And then all of a sudden, as the ice got stronger and stronger, it started to crush the boat. And it was an old wooden-sided boat. And so, waiting for the magic day, he got everybody together, and they said, we're going to have to get out of the boat, live on the ice. And then they made their dramatic escape, took the lifeboats, moved them a few hundred feet from the boat, safety, home, and everything. The ice floe crushed the boat and sank it. And by the way, they found that boat about 3 years ago.
I heard about this expedition. Yeah.
So anyway, Sir Ernest was a unique leader at the time. At the time, the leadership principles were basically military. Command here, worker here, the king says, or the general says, jump, and the servant has to say, how high on the way up. And that's the way management worked through most of the 1900s. This is like back in 1907 or thereabouts. It was a strange event in that Sir Ernest was one child, a son, with, I can't remember if it's six or seven sisters. He was heavily influenced as the only boy in a family of six or seven sisters. And today we talk about the difference between male leadership and female leadership. And often people find out that women are better leaders. They're more cooperative. They're more, they rule by consensus. They give everybody a chance to speak and give their ideas. And it's kind of a democracy, but we all get something to say about it and we move forward. So he's put in this desperate situation. There are no telegraphs, no radios, no anything. You know, it's 100% dark 6 months out of the year. The only food source they've got is occasionally a break in the ice where they can eat walrus and fish, penguins. So they had some stores with them. And when the story was over, the end of the story, he knows they're dying. They get in this lifeboat with two or three other individuals, and they sail with nothing but a compass heading, and they go to a whaling station 700 miles away. Plus or minus a half a percent, they would have died. They hit the island, and they lived. They get the rescue effort. They come back, and every single man came back alive. In their diaries, every man said he was the greatest leader they had ever followed. In his diary, he said, I hated half of them. I just wanted to shoot them, but I had to keep them going. And this story, in this chapter, which is, you know, 50 or 60 pages, is what he did as a leader to hold the team together, to be optimistic, realistically, to tell them, we're never going to quit, we're never giving up, I'm going to get you home. And the fact that every single one of them wrote in their diaries later that he was the finest leader they ever followed in their life. It is an amazing glimpse of today's leadership style.
I love this. So this is way, way ahead of its time. Way, way, way ahead of its time. But you look at your background. So you were, maybe give me just, because I know that you came from the military. And I'm also curious how you led such an incredible organization. And you were a forward-looking leader. But you came from that same military background, albeit, you know, several years later. But still, you also, I mean, you are also from a time when there was still a very strict hierarchical leadership, but the way that you built RE/MAX, I think that you were very forward-looking, and that's why you speak about this story in your book, because this is like the way that you lead, the way that people should lead. So maybe speak about some of the influence that the military had or didn't have on how you built the company.
Well, Scott, I grew up on a farm in Marion, Indiana. It's a farming community. My parents had 40 acres that we share cropped out, and they had small construction business. And I was adopted. My father, stepfather, was an engineer, graduated valedictorian of his class in Purdue in 1944, or whatever it was. He's a fine gentleman. He's always kind and caring to me. My parents never understood me. I think that I was probably ADD. I was pretty smart, but I was not into studying. And mommy and daddy said, you're going to college. And so I went to college and I failed out. And mommy and daddy weren't there to tell me, sit down, shut up, and study and get your lessons done every night. And fortunately, I discovered fraternities and girls and a little bit of beer. And well, the rest is history. And it didn't work. And what ended up happening was I was smart enough, but I didn't have the goal. I didn't go to college like some lucky people and say, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a nurse. I want to be a businessman. I just wanted to be rich. So if I can digress 1 second, and this puts this whole story into perspective. I'm 6 years old, standing in a cornfield, Marion, Indiana, and I looked at my father and I said, Dad, why do we live in a place like Marion, Indiana? It's muddy. It's ugly. There's nothing here. Animals. The only thing we have are rabbits and squirrels. Why don't we live someplace nice? And he said, well, son, my parents and their grandparents were born and raised in this county, and that this is our community, and this is our church. These are our friends, and this is where we live. And I said, Dad, we went to California on vacation. It was beautiful. The ocean is amazing. We went to Arizona. We went to Florida. These are beautiful places. Why don't we live there? We can have church and friends and family and everything and live in a beautiful place. And my father, very kind man, we had an amazing relationship. And he looked at me and he says, son, you live in my house, you eat my food, you'll do exactly what I tell you until the day you turn 18. When you turn 18, you're free. Do whatever you want. And I looked at him at that age and I said, Dad, I want to be a soldier. I want to be a pilot. I want to skydive. I want to scuba dive. I want to hunt animals all over the world. I want a life of adventure. I want to go look for sunken treasure. I want to do all these things. And you can't do them in Marion, Indiana. On my 18th birthday, I sent my dad from a place called Vietnam a letter. And I said, Dad, there's tanks, there's helicopters, there's actually tigers in the forest, and there's big snakes. And this is a hoot. This beats the hell out of Marion, Indiana. I ain't never coming back. And then I went off to the strangest life you could ever live. I've done 5,000 scuba dives. I've got thousands of hours. I own my own jet fighter airplanes. I've done over 100 and some, 200 skydives. I've had this adventure with NASCAR. I drove for 10 years. I own NASCAR teams for over 10 years. I've had this fabulous life filled of death-defying things. And you know what the greatest adventure of all was? I started RE/MAX with no money, one employee, and the next 51 years, built one of the largest, most successful franchise organizations in the world. Now that is an adventure.
I love that. you know, you took a 180 from what you did growing up. You completely went in like a different direction. And then I guess, you know, the question is, what did that life teach you? The skydiving, the fighting in Vietnam, the all that, what did that teach you about running a business? How did you turn that into a success, like one of the most successful real estate organizations in the world?
Scott, what the military did is it gave me time to become an adult. At age 18 and 19, it's proven scientifically, boy babies' brains are not finished yet. Women are mature by 18. Most men don't get there until 25. I like to tell everybody, I really never should have been given a driver's license until I was about 65, because I was stupid. I was a risk taker. I was just dumb, you know. I just, you know, immature, naive. That's stupid. The military gave me 5 or 6 years to grow up. And I'll tell you what, when you watch people die, when you stand on a flight line and you watch the pilots fly out every night and 96 planes leave and only 92 come back, that's life-changing. All of a sudden, you start to grow up really quick. And you don't sleep in if you've had a little much, too much partying. If you're not on the job at 7:01, you're up. You're in a lot of trouble. They taught me discipline. They taught me maturity. I got to learn from real heroes, not sports heroes, not political heroes. I got to watch men and women that were the heroes of my generation. And we were in an unpopular war in an unpopular place. And I got to watch the sacrifice, the humility, the leadership, and to some extent, bureaucracy. And that gave me the 6 or 7 years of extra maturity that when I started Remax, I had life experiences very few people have ever experienced.
When you look at starting Remax, you know, you speak a lot about how people have to find their why. How did you know that real estate was your why?
I was broke. I was an enlisted man.
Yeah.
I worked 3 part-time jobs in addition to the military job when I was stateside. I got enough money to buy a $10,500 house. Today, that would be probably $250,000. I flipped it in 5 months, and I made $5,000. It was more than my military and 3 part-time jobs for a year, and the die was cast, so I started buying and selling houses, and I read all the books on investment. And somewhere along the line, even though I was part-time in the military, I got a real estate license, not to ever sell, but to save the commission on my investments. And the goal was, I'm going to have 21 houses by the time I'm 21 years old, and I'm a combat soldier. So that's really weird. And when I went off to war, my young bride, she was left at home with a child or two, and she had to manage these properties, and it all worked out. So I fell in love with the real estate industry, and by mistake, I looked around my office, all these losers. The real estate business is 80% losers. And I looked at these old people. Scott, they were old. They were 40 and 50 and 60 years old. And they would find a deal once every 4 or 5 months. And I'm thinking, well, I'm a young, hard charger. I can change the world. And the rest is history. I did.
I love that. And, you know, you think like when you got into real estate, you just wanted to disrupt. I mean, do you think that there's still that amount of opportunity and wealth building and disruption in real estate when you fast forward to 2024 is when you started?
Scott, the real estate industry is in upheaval right now.
I know.
It's a very cyclical business. It's we've been through 9 presidencies. 2 of them were absolutely stupid. 2 are absolutely crooked. 2 or 3 of them were halfway decent, and the rest I don't care about. And my company made profits through all those administrations. We've been through 7 recessions. Maybe we're in the 8th recession now, and we made money in all of those recessions. And so you deal with the hand that's been dealt to you, and you find a way to adapt. You overcome, you go under, you go around, you go through, but you don't quit. The United States of America is the greatest hotbed of entrepreneurial spirit in the world. And during the pandemic, we've had a revitalization of people who are sick and tired of the old way, don't want to work for the man, that want to say, well, I'll branch out and do my own thing, and I'll give it a try. So our economy is made up largely of the United States government, which throws money down the toilet, bureaucratic, worthless. And then you have major companies, and you see the technological marvels of Apple and Google and Amazon and Microsoft and the changes they have brought about. And then you have normal businesses, big businesses, and then you have small businesses. Our small businesses account for a third of the gross national product. It's the small mom and pop shops. It's the small McDonald's. It's the small landscape guy.
Yeah. I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins. And I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. I just want to take a second and thank Policy Genius. They're supporting today's episode of Success Story. I know we all have kids. We all have families we want to take care of. And I personally checked something off major on my to-do list, life insurance. It's a tough topic. It's really hard to think about, but it's so important. And the hard part was sorting through all the options. Luckily, I found Policy Genius. Policy Genius is an online insurance marketplace that makes getting life insurance surprisingly easy. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Now, knowing my family's protected brings me incredible peace of mind. Don't put off this important decision. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Today's show is brought to you by 1Password. Now listen, we all have that one friend who's constantly forgetting passwords and needing help to get into their accounts. I have a solution. It's called 1Password. 1Password is the award-winning password manager trusted by millions of users and companies like IBM and Slack to keep logins, credit cards, and other private info safe in an encrypted vault that only you can access. No more sticky notes with passwords or using the same password everywhere. I've been using 1Password for a year now, and I can't recommend it enough. It saves me time from having to reset passwords and gives me peace of mind knowing my info is secure. With convenient features like automatic password generation and login autofill, 1Password takes the hassle out of passwords. You can use it on all your devices, iOS, Android, Mac, PC. Everything syncs seamlessly. And with top-notch security audits and encryption, your data stays private. So do yourself a favor and check out 1Password today. Go to 1Password.com/Clary and get a 2-week free trial. Let 1Password remember all of your logins for you so you can remember what really matters. That's onepassword.com/Clary for 2 weeks free.
The opportunity today is greater than any time in our history.
I love that. I love that you're very optimistic because, you know, people are very short-sighted when it comes to opportunity in the market, right? I think that right now, I mean, you talk about real estate in particular. You can talk about all entrepreneurship. You talk about real estate in particular. A couple of class action lawsuits have been brought against real estate companies. The whole buy side representation. I'm not from the real estate, but I know there's a whole bunch of issues with like buy side representation and commissions. And I know enough people that run their own brokerages, that are agents, of course, that feel like it's been all been, you know, sort of the rug's been pulled out from under them, and this is the worst thing to ever happen. So you think that regardless of all the shit hitting the fan moments, the market self-corrects, there's always going to be more opportunity. It's never going to really, really disrupt or ruin an industry, regardless of this regulatory here, this legislation here, this class action there.
Oh, industries get destroyed, and some of them never recover.
But do you feel that's what's happened? Is that what could happen or no?
No, not in the real estate business yet. But Darwin is supposedly said, the strongest of the species survives. He never said that. Darwin said, the most adaptable of the species survives. The dinosaurs 100 million years ago were the strongest animals ever known. They're gone. The mosquito is still here. And so this concept of adaptability and accepting change has become paramount in American business. The rate of change is so fast and accelerating so fast that if you stick your head in the sand like an ostrich, you're left behind. You can't do today's business with yesterday's methods and expect to be in business tomorrow. It's quite simple. And so the speed of change that is happening does not mean that it's devastating. It just means it is just changing so fast. The internet has changed everything. It's the equalizer. It's bringing education to billions of people that never had that opportunity. The whole world is going entrepreneurial, and that is a good thing for society.
When you look at, because the book lists tons of entrepreneurial traits, things that are required, or at least somebody should have some of these traits to be successful. You mentioned like taking risks, innovation, persevering through failure. Is there one trait? And this is going to be, obviously, I know all the traits are important, but you know, humor me, bear with me. Is there one trait that you think is critical? Is like, you can't be an entrepreneur without this?
No, I think entrepreneurs are leaders. And as you know, I have a chapter that talks about leadership and another chapter that talks about management. So let's go to leadership. There's one common trait of all great leaders, which is the same for all great entrepreneurs. And that's basically, leaders sell hope. If you look at Martin Luther King, controversial in my generation, during the peace marches and so on of Vietnam era, Martin Luther believed in a peaceful transition. He was trying to sell the idea that black people, brown people, yellow people, and white people and our children could all have a better future because we are equal in God's eye. He attracted tens of millions of followers. If you look at Ronald Reagan, he came into office basically a Hollywood actor, and all he did was he sold hope. He said, make America great. Donald Trump, he came in 20 years later, 30 years later, make America great again. Hillary campaigned on Hillary strong. That's so phony. That didn't tell you anything. Barack Obama said hope. The only word he had on his lapel pin, hope. We're going to build a greater nation together. So in leadership, politics right now, very divisive. But in reality, the people that we respect, whichever political party you're with, are selling a hope that your standards, your values, your moral feelings, your family are going to have a better generation than we do. Leadership, when I sold RE/MAX, it was, I'm making a better life for real estate agents. Instead of a 50-50 commission split and the broker taking it all, why don't we work like a co-op? We work together, pay our own expenses, and keep the majority of the fee for ourselves. It was, we were destined to hope for a better outcome for our careers. So all leaders, no matter what you do, it's selling hope. So if you're a small person with a hamburger stand and you have probably a multicultural, multi-generational workforce, what are you selling to those people? Well, you sell your values. We're going to have the best tasting hamburger in the world. And by the way, I mean, some of you are here to make part-time money so you can go to college and you can make a life of yourself, and you're going to learn some great work ethics here. And so I'm selling hope. I want to get you to college. I want you to get to college. I want you to be successful. It's true for everybody. Great leaders find a vision, a mission, and they work towards it.
When you look at the size of what you built and the fact that you built this value of hope across RE/MAX, how do you get people to buy into that vision?
Well, the first one or two are pretty tough. Matter of fact, the first 400 or 500 were tough. But once we'd proven the concept over 5 years, it was a simple task. It worked. Our average agent was keeping 85% of the commission, whereas top producers throughout the industry was getting a 50-50 split. So the proof of the pie was in the pudding. Every place we went for the next few years, all we heard was, we're different. In Chicago, they said, you guys don't even wear a coat and tie to work. Be successful in Colorado or Chicago, you got to have a coat and tie or whatever women wear. We went to Atlanta, and they said, never work here. We're genteel. We wouldn't steal agents from each other. Nonsense. Went to Quebec, and they said, you don't even speak French. And yet, RE/MAX worked every place we went, 110 countries. All the rules are different. We're in socialist countries, capitalist countries. We're in communist countries. We're in dictatorships. It works. We're in places that have never had a license law, don't have any franchise laws. 70% of the places we're in don't have multiple listing services. None of them have training. And you look at it, and it works. And what we found out was everybody in every market we went to says, we're different here. We're not like you guys in Denver. And they were right. Religions are different. Governments are different. The rules are different. But you know what we found out? Human beings are the same. Every one of us, me and you, Scott, we want to do better for our family. We'd like to make more money. We'd like more respect. We'd like to make more money our way. We'd like to protect and take care of our elders. We would like to protect and take care of our children. We would like to raise our children in our home to our moral standards, to our religious beliefs, without the interference of somebody else. And the key to RE/MAX's success is we've never said that the RE/MAX concept and the RE/MAX system is an American concept. Our system is one of, we tried to create an environment in a real estate office where every person there can achieve the ultimate success they personally want. We don't say, we want every way to make $100,000 a year. They don't. They have different drives, different ambitions, different ages, different requirements. What we say is create an environment where people have the greatest opportunity to live up to their achievements that they personally want, not the achievements the company wants.
I just want to take a second and thank the HubSpot Podcast Network for supporting Success Story. We're part of the network. If you love podcasts, the HubSpot Podcast Network has other incredible podcasts like Entrepreneurs on Fire, hosted by John Lee Dumas. Entrepreneurs on Fire is one of the OG entrepreneur podcasts. It really stokes inspiration, shares strategies to fire up your entrepreneurial journey to create the life you've always dreamed of. It has unlimited energy, value, and consistency. The podcast is truly for anyone who wants to learn more about entrepreneurship. If you like fast-paced, packed with value stories, this show is for you. John brings on great guests. He speaks about failures, aha moments, what's working for them currently. If you love podcasts, go listen to Entrepreneurs on Fire wherever you get your podcasts.
It's very interesting. The shift, it's a shift from company-driven to like human-driven. You're very human-driven because you're focusing on the human first. You're like a human-centric organization. I guess that's why it was successful. But I'm just thinking of other companies that do that well. And I don't know the policies of like the Apples and the Amazons, but you definitely don't, you don't hear that from the employees of that company to the same degree. But I think that the aligning the company mission with the human mission, I think that's very important.
You know, if you look at my book, there's probably about 25% of it came from the College of Hard Knocks and the mistakes I made and the people that helped me succeed. And I was mentored by so many people. I was given a hand up so often. But if you look at the last 30 or 40 years of American business, it's changed dramatically. If you look at the impact that Apple, Google, Amazon, Facebook, whatever it is, has had on our world, it's truly amazing what they've done. The entire concept of leadership, of groupthink, of servant leadership is changing so dramatically. And Darren Hardy, I don't know if you follow Darren at all, but he's a mentor to me. Strangely enough, at age 21, he was my top agent in California. And now, 25 years later, he is one of the most impressive individuals I've ever worked with. He has a saying that's repeated now. What's your definition of success? I want to do what I want to do, when I want to, where to I want to, with who I want to, and how I want to. That is independence. That is success. Those five factors are, I want to do it my way. When, where, what, how, and with whom. And the best companies in the United States right now are those that are preaching that kind of a philosophy.
Do you feel like those companies, that the FANG, the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, whatever, all those large companies, do you feel like they do it world? Are they world class at doing that?
Yes, they are different.
Yeah,
they're collaborative. They're built on consensus by an entrepreneur that wants to win. If you look at the old military, the general says to the soldier, "When I tell you jump, ask how high on the way up." Mm-hmm. If you look at special ops, I don't care whether it's Delta, Green Beret, SEALs, Rangers, or whatever it is, it's an entirely different philosophy. They're usually a tight-knit group, a team of 8 to 10. You may have one officer in the group. You probably have a varying group of ages. When you plan a mission, everybody has a voice in the plan. Every single person sits before you're going into this battleground and says, what about this? What about that? Have you thought about this? The lowliest soldier, the least in rank, can look at the general or look at the captain and say, I don't like this. I think we're exposed. And you can chat it out. That's consensus building. When you go in, there is one leader. You're in a combat situation. You know what happens if the leader is down. Second person is the next leader. Third person is the next leader. And if you get home, great. When you come home, the first thing they do is not a military hierarchy, It's they sit around, depending on the leader, maybe they're going to grab some beers. And if the person's too strict, they sit around and drink coffee. But anyway, everybody has a right to say, well, we're right, well, we're wrong. And the lowliest person can say, Lieutenant, you broke right when you were supposed to break left, and I covered you with my gun, and if I'd squeezed the trigger, you were dead, and we would have lost. You made a mistake that almost ruined this mission for us. And that leader has got to look at that person and say, you're absolutely right. I was rattled. I forgot. I went the wrong way. I'll learn from that. Thank you for putting that out. That isn't a career-ending statement on those two individuals' part. It's we're a team. We win by a team, or we die as a team. We all want to come home. And so when you start looking at American businesses today, this autocratic, top-down nonsense doesn't work. Even in the smallest groups in a business, smallest groups in a church, smallest groups in a philanthropy, you still have to do things consensus. Everybody wants input. Everybody wants to be able to argue. And everybody knows I win some, I lose some, and I'm not going to be a pouty person. If I didn't get my way this time, I had my chance to express myself.
You've done that. I mean, you did that in Remax to the degree of you were building this consensus and team concept. So I think agents were sharing resources. You were sharing all this stuff. Were they sharing leads at one point as well? Like, you had everybody working together and collaborating. And I think that that's something that, like you said, when Remax was doing it, maybe you were slightly pioneering. Now it seems to be the status quo. But that's how you build this high-performing team culture. I love it.
You know, if you're sculling outside of New England and you got everybody in the boat and you got the oars in the water, and if one of them's dipping the oars here and the other one's wading and dipping it, you just go around in circles.
Yeah.
And so teamwork is where it's about. I would tell you this much. We had our 50th anniversary a year ago, Remax, we had 51st this week. And I made a comment, our presentation, and I said, you do have to understand, I just got 5 standing ovations today. But Gail and I, founding this company, are mere footnotes to the story. This company was never built by Dave and Gail. It was built by hundreds of thousands of agents and brokers over 51 years that collectively figured a way to make this thing work together. You build gigantic enterprises with consensus, following a common vision, having a common mission, being proud of what you do every day, and then just accepting the world. It's going to change. You have to be adaptable. In the military world, you plan and you plan and you plan, and the first time a gun goes off, the plan goes to hell. But the fact is, you've planned 30 different plans. What happens? And when that shot goes off and the initial plan A doesn't work, you've already thought about plan B through 35B. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about a couple more sort of entrepreneurial lessons that you've learned over your career. You speak a lot about failure. I think failure is really, really an important tool for people. How did failure play its part in your career? What was the failure? What was the multiple failures? I'm sure there was thousands across the career, but pick something that stood out or a few things that stood out. How did it impact you?
When we first started, I was so damn egotistical. My ego was so big, I had the way. And yet the industry tried to kill me. They literally wanted us to fail because if we succeeded, it meant they had to pay all their top producers more. And they were trying to drive me out of business. And the thing's remarkable was they didn't need to try very hard. I was succeeding pretty well by myself with all the mistakes I was making. But I will tell you, I want to win. I do not quit. I don't want to fail. And if you want to win bad enough, swallow your pride. And I sat with my teams and I said, what did you like best about the company you worked for before you joined RE/MAX? What did you dislike the most? What do you like best about being with RE/MAX? What do you dislike the most? What do you like best about me, Dave Liniger, as your president and CEO? What do you dislike the most? I'm 20 years younger than all the people I led. And I said, teach me, train me, mentor me to be the kind of a man you would like to follow. Now that hurts, to make yourself that vulnerable and know that you've opened the door to hell and you've said, okay, I know I'm screwing up, but tell me how. And some people are diplomatic and some people are just flat forceful and say, you know, you just don't keep your word. You promised you'd do this and this and this, and you didn't. And all of a sudden you realize, I did talk about that in one of our meetings, and I didn't keep a written record of it, and so it's not in front of me as a to-do list, and so I screwed up. And so most entrepreneurs don't really understand. Your followers will forgive you if you're upfront and transparent and say, I know I've made some mistakes. I don't want to make the same ones twice. Help me here, please. Grow me up a little bit. That's the great part of RE/MAX's success is I had so many failures, but I was willing to take the blame for them myself. If the team wins, the team wins.
How long did it take you to get rid of the ego when you first started out?
It took probably about 3 years. It was pretty disastrous. But once I grew into my position, yeah. I became a mature individual. The journey, it's a journey. There's no end. It's just a journey.
I know. I think it's just smart, very smart lessons, especially for people that are just starting out. Because I think that, you know,
for the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thank you so much, Indeed, for sponsoring Success Story. For all business leaders out there, Indeed is a lifesaver. See, we're always driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You're going to ditch the busy work and you're going to use Indeed for scheduling, screening, messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Clary. Just go to Indeed.com/Clary right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Clary. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
The first version of building your own thing for many entrepreneurs, they all think they have everything figured out. They think they're, you know, yeah. They think they're like God's gift to business, and they probably had some success, and they probably, you know, whatever, they made some money in their career, and then they start to build, and I think the life slaps them in the face really quick. So I think,
can I give you a little interesting tidbit?
Yeah, of course.
I'm reading this the other day. It says, do you know what the average age of a person starting their own business is?
What is, I don't know. What is it?
47. Everybody
not,
thinks
not a Stanford dropout.
No, everybody thinks that Bill Gates, you know, started Microsoft when he was 20, and Facebook was started by such and such, and all that stuff. The typical entrepreneur comes through life, learns life lessons, watches the idiot bosses he works for, and at some point he or she says, I can do this better than you can. You're an idiot. And so the things happen is everybody looks back on each generation, and the older generation says, these young fools, they don't know anything. Man, when I went to high school, I had to walk uphill, downhill, both ways to school in a snowstorm, and they just sit here and play on their iPhones. The truth of the matter is, every generation in America's history in the last probably 150 years has been better than the previous group. We've had different experiences, and nobody in our generation, or the millennials, understood the famine, or understood the Depression, or understood World War I or World War II. But understanding is not the same thing as living. Mm-hmm. And so, if I can make a political statement here, careful, David. The Civil War, most people treated blacks very poorly. There were blacks that fought on both sides of the war, by the way. And by the time we got to World War I, Reconstruction came about. People were giving mouth service to everybody should be equal. But in the military, there were black military companies, and there were white companies, and the blacks were led by white men. And by the time you got to World War II, it started to be much more segregated. By the time you got to Vietnam, we had black lieutenants, captains, and majors in combat running white troops for the most part. And so we see this gradual transition over 100 and some years of getting rid of the racial inequality. If you look at today's Generation Z, generation whatever, the concept of prejudice is so far removed than any previous generation. Everything's about a team. Everything's about a group. Teenagers date in groups, and they don't care whether you're pink or yellow or black or whatever. And they don't look down on mixed marriages as, well, this is very strange, or this isn't maybe taboo. It's, this is life.
Yeah.
And so I think that we are progressing as a human species extraordinarily well.
I agree. I fully agree, which means that sometimes the lessons that maybe a previous generation has, or the experience that a previous generation has, it may not be applicable to the current environment as much as the current generation's experience. Like, I wouldn't go to my parents and my grandparents for advice on a lot of stuff that I'm dealing with right now, because it's a different generation. There's wisdom in history, for sure. And there's lessons in history, but I mean, it's twofold too. Why do we come to this conversation? Because we said that people shouldn't get an ego. So you can't have an ego. You can say that, listen, I've lived and learned experience, and I know a little bit, but you still have to humble yourself when you're building anything. So you don't know more. It's not like, yeah, maybe you know contextually more relevant information than your parents or your grandparents, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that you're still going to be flawless in as you build something. You still have to humble yourself regardless, even if you are a more forward-looking generation or individual.
I mentioned in the book a lesson I learned from Darren Hardy, and that is, this is the first time in history that we have five generations working in the workforce at the same time.
Yeah.
We still have the matures that were born before World War II ended. Then you got the baby boomers, and then you got the millennials and the X-gens, and whatever. You got five distinct working groups, and the two youngest ones now make up 50% of the workforce. And so all five have common things that you lead from, but all five are unique to their generation. And so today's leader, whether you're a young person, 27 years old, managing people who are 70 years old to 18 years old, or whether you're a 65-year-old, reversing that, you have to be cognizant of most people have common traits that they want to work towards, but they have common or they have uncommon disparities of how to get there. This is a unique leadership error, never occurred in history, ever.
That's tough. So to be successful, to build a good business, you got to understand these five generations. You know, if you were going to build something, how do you manage all these different people? What's the strategy so that you get it right?
I think the strategy is understanding the differences. I think the strategy is you got two ears and one mouth, shut up. Listen, you know, we recently had a change in CEOs in the RE/MAX organization, and we found somebody I think is delightful. The first five CEOs in 50 years were all inborn. We all came from the real estate industry. It was all people that I hired, I promoted, I mentored. And for the first time, we brought an outsider in. And so he was managing a much larger enterprise than ours, 10 times our size. And the board asked him, he said, what are you going to do your first 100 days? And he said, I'm going to listen. I'm not making any proclamations. I'm going to listen to every person I can. I'll meet every person at headquarters. I'll meet the key broker owners and franchisees. I'm going to meet our competitors. And I'm going to use this as a learning period to where I get a firm base of understanding, and then we will start leading. He's doing a pretty good job of it, and he has done the listening, and I'm proud of him for that. But I mean, that's our world, is we must listen to everything around us. The leader is going to have to make the decisions. You can't be a democracy and say, how many people want to give the secretary a $10 raise this week? That isn't, you're abdicating your leadership. But leadership is listen, feel, what's everybody else feel, and then make your plans.
I think the last sort of entrepreneurial trait that you speak about quite often is passion. And from what I understand, you're exemplifying passion, because I don't think you've been cut a check in several years now. So, but you're still like, rolling up your sleeves sometimes. So what does passion mean for an entrepreneur? How did you find passion? How did you architect passion? Maybe it's not finding it. Maybe it's building it. I don't know. But talk to me about passion.
Passion's individual to each individual. And some people, I don't know how to feel passionate about anything. Well, if you talk to most mothers that have a baby, they're pretty damn passionate about this child is my child, and I'm going to give it the best life I can give it. That's a mothering instinct. I have been passionate about what I do since the day I started RE/MAX. I've never done it for the money.
Mm-hmm.
The money comes. I had this vision. I thought there was a better way for real estate agents to be compensated, especially the top producers. And so, you know, each person, you have your own vision. You have your heart. Do you know what counts? So I've been unfortunate to be in a traumatic brain injury hospital, spinal cord injury hospital, for nearly a year. I was in a coma for 3 months, and they told me that I could never walk again. And I'm the anomaly. I made it. But my passion was, I know how to win, and I have failed. So I can remember coming out of my coma, 3 months, incredible pain, 100% a quadriplegic. I couldn't eat. They had to hand feed me a grape or a little bit of water, and they had a feeding tube in my tummy because I was flat on my back and I would choke to death if I tried to swallow milk. I couldn't brush my teeth, I couldn't shave, couldn't feed myself, could not pipe my own bottom. And I went from being a billionaire, independent, powerful individual to where I was 100% dependent on somebody else to take care of me hour by hour, minute by minute. And my passion was, I'm walking out of this place. My doctors did all the nerve tests. They looked at me and they said, we hope for the best, we train for the worst, and we're going to teach you how to be a quadriplegic and be happy. And I was very forceful with them, a bit foul-mouthed, by the way. And they kept saying, you never walk out of here. Wake up, be realistic, and allow us to help you. And I told every one of them, I said, get this shit straight. I'm going to walk out of this hospital and you can kiss my ass. Well, as it would happen, I had 3 different goal dates. They changed 3 different times. When I went home as a quad. And I said, I'm going to walk. My passion was, I can do this. I went back to hospital 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, the most excruciating physical therapy you can get. I had the most wonderful service dog that the SWAT team found in Frankfurt, came to me before I could really walk or anything. We learned together. And the magic day came when a wonderful dinner at a huge steakhouse invited 200 people from the medical facility that had been involved in my care. I was in my electric wheelchair and I said, I owe you an apology. I told all of you, I promise you, I committed, you could kiss my ass and I'd walk out of the hospital, and I obviously didn't succeed. I said, I appreciate the care and everything you did for me. And I said, by the way, I got out of my chair with a cane and I walked across the room. My doctors cried. So passion is this belief of, I can still have a better life. My fallback position was, I watched the wheelchair guys that had their hands and arms used, and they were trying to play basketball, and they beat the hell out of each other. They knock everybody upside down, and the able-bodied nurses had run out, set them back up, and they keep playing ball. I watched them with the ground hockey they were doing with the hockey sticks, beating the hell out of each other. They were still manly men. And I'd made up my mind that particular night, okay, if I'm stuck being a paraplegic, I'm going to be the toughest paraplegic anybody's ever met in their life. And fortunately, I did pretty good. I'm the one in a million. My nerve damage wasn't as extensive as the tests show, and that I have my second chance. But passions is what it's about. I haven't worked a day in my life, period, since I went in the military. I love the military. I love the camaraderie. I love the men and women I serve with. When I started the real estate business, I fell in love with realtors. They work hard. 80% of them fail. They're trying as hard as they can. There's no salaries. It's a tough job to break into. Everybody thinks it's easy. It's not. But once you do it and you're providing world-class service, you're in a different fraternity. And so to anybody that's listening to this program, if you're passionate about what you want, if you are willing to die for what you believe in, you won't quit. You only lose if you fold them.
That's the lesson. That's the lesson I want everyone to take away, because if people can find that passion in their life where they never work a day and they apply that to their job, their relationship, their health, physical health, mental health, whatever it is, then you can't lose. You can't lose, because that's super. Look at what it's done. Look at what it's done for you. I mean, it's incredible. If you were going to leave the audience with one last lesson, something that maybe we didn't go into that was important for you, what would you want to leave them with? Something you learned over your career.
So, Scott, I was always a kind person, I think. There are people who will tell you I was mean and nasty, and being a fighter, I've been in a lot of fights. I thought I've always been honest and kind. When you go from incredible independence, and you remember being a Boy Scout and helping people across the street, or to help an old lady with the grocery bags, and finding a self-worth and, you know, I can give back a little bit. The thing that's most remarkable about becoming a quadriplegic and finding your way back from that was I found out how incredibly kind the everyday person is. You're out in the freeway, you're going into the parking lot, you get cut off, somebody honks their horn and they throws the bird, and you think, you idiot, and you're going to have some road rage here and shoot the bastard. No. Then maybe you catch yourself in a moment of sanity and you say, you know, my wife was in a plane crash, and there's this 18-year-old kid. The plane was on fire, and he went in and saved her life. I've never met him, and I've never shook his hand. Maybe that was the person, and he's having a bad day, or I'm having a bad day. And what I've found out from going from total independence to total dependence is how kind people are that are dependent. I have gone to the grocery store and struggling with double crutches trying to get a door open, and had gangbangers with their baseball cap on backwards say, excuse me, sir, let me help you the door. That would never have occurred to me before I was the person in need, that this individual that many of us would look down on and say, boy, he screwed up, but he still had the humanity to say, sir, can I help you with your door? And so, in other words, the message is the world is so filled with kind and caring and wonderful people. Ignore the slights and the bumps. Banging into each other sometimes happens. And be grateful for all the people in the world.
I love that. Where can people connect with you? Where can people get your book? I mean, Amazon and all the other places they would probably buy books, but what's the social do you want to send people to at a website?
You know, DaveLendiger.com. Okay. I keep it updated constantly. My legacy now is I'm trying to help other people achieve the kind of success that I and many of my friends have achieved. There have been so many remarkable people who've helped me along the way, that reached down and helped me get up the next step of the mountain. And it's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, I'm 78 years old. I can't drive NASCAR anymore. I really can't skydive much anymore. I can't get in my sports cars and drive 200 miles an hour. And I'm probably not supposed to scuba dive. And I mean, all this adventure things I had, you know, that there are chapters in your life. And sometimes the door closes on that chapter. That doesn't mean forget it. Wonderful memories. It's just awesome to have had the experiences. But what do you do at the end of your life? And that is, okay, we got unlimited money, unlimited food. I've got, you know, three homes, a ranch, and, you know, a loving family, four fabulous kids, unbelievable wife. And so what is left? How do you help other people along? Mm-hmm. How do you help people like they help me? And so the things that I talk about is from the heart, period.
Do you know, when you look back, are there any things that you regret?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I started in the military, I spent too much time in the military. It was not fair to a young bride with a couple young children. And when I started Remax and I started achieving incredible personal success, well, I had a stay-at-home wife, and her job was, you raise the kids until they're adults, and then I'll be a human being and talk to them. And that was not fair to her, and that ended up in a divorce. Not her fault, not my fault, and just does happen. So you're going to have regrets in your life. You're going to regret things that you say to people that you should not have said. You're going to regret the way you behave someplace or the way you reacted to somebody. That's a human being. You got to find in your heart the ability not just to forgive those people that have injured you. You got to find a way in your heart to forgive yourself for being stupid. Because human beings are basically stupid. We come into the world naked, frightened, scared shitless. And we all die the same way. At some point, we do die. But we all start the same place. So I think the most important thing to say is, it's a great life. We have tragedies. We have unbelievable difficulties that happen in people's lives. The vast majority of us, especially in the United States, have an incredible lifetime compared to any other generation in history. It's a wonderful world.
If you were going to tell your younger self, your 20-year-old self, one lesson, what would that be?
Oh, God. I wish I had paid attention to my parents when I should have.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.